I'm Carrie Kaufman, and this is the Nevada Voice Podcast, sitting here with my co-host Akiko Cooks, talking again about bias in schools. Hello, yes. Akiko.
Hi, Carrie. So we're back.
We are back. We're talking today with Michelle Amor-Gilley. Now, Michelle does not live in Nevada. I know this is the Nevada Voice, but Michelle lives in California. She teaches screenwriting at Loyola Marymount, and she had a social media post that went viral last week. It was about her son, who was given a B in AP history, despite earning an A. She coached her son to advocate for himself, which is something that you keep talking about. And when that didn't work, she and her husband stepped in. I'm not going to tell the rest of the story. I'm going to let her tell the rest of the story. Michelle, welcome to the Nevada Voice Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, I just want to say that we are sitting here at like around noon Las Vegas time. It is 9 p.m. your time because you're in Budapest. Tell me what you're doing in Budapest.
I am teaching abroad. So this semester, I am over here in Budapest teaching screenwriting, teaching adaptation to film students from LMU plus students, Hungarian students. So it's been an incredible experience, I have to say. Half of my students don't speak English.
Wow.
But we have an interpreter in the classroom, and it's been incredible.
Okay.
Because story is universal, so... You know, we're talking stories.
Story is universal. But there are, I would love to talk to you in another context about how you're, you know, reading and grading their, the Hungarians' screenplays if they're not writing in English. But that's a whole other thing. So I want you to tell me what happened with your son. And if you're comfortable talking about which school it is.
I'm totally fine with that.
Okay, so what school and what happened with your son?
Okay, so let me just go back. We are not from Los Angeles originally. We're from Chicago, but we moved there in 2010.
Yeah.
So my son has been in...
Sorry.
Yeah. So my son has been in the LAUSD system since second grade, and I've had some pretty positive experiences. But going even back to the beginning, I remember when I first started in the school system, my son broke both his arms right before school started. And new school, new everything. I'm going to grad school. And I remember the school told me that he could not start school with the broken arms. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me, why is that? And they said, oh, well, we don't have anyone in the classroom. And that was the first time they learned who I was, because I was like, well, then I'll go to the board and I'll make sure that he's listed as disabled, and then you'll get him someone, because there's no reason he's going to miss school because his arms are broken. And they were like, oh, no, Mom, we'll take care of it. And I remember at the end of that year, one of the teachers said, you're one of the baddest parents we've ever had, in a good way. She was like, you really fought for your son to make sure that he received his education, because I knew he would have those casts on for 6 weeks. So that was just my intro into LAUSD, that I'm like, okay,
man,
I'm going to have to deal with this school district, or this, you know, just deal with the school board in a different way.
So wait a second. So I have to clarify here. Michelle, I have to clarify here. When you say LAUSD, you're talking about Los Angeles Unified School District, right?
Unified School District,
okay.
Yes.
And I also have to know, because I'm sure Akiko and I are sitting here.
I grew up in LAUSD.
Oh, you also grew up in LAUSD.
Yes.
So I would like to know what school it was. And also, how did he break his arms?
Oh, he, at the park, he was on a zip line and he fell. And what was crazy is, as soon as he fell, I was like, oop, they're both broken.
It was just
one of those like freak accidents. And so the school was actually Clover Elementary, which is an incredible, it's a blue ribbon school. Mm. But the problem is, they were like, oh, he can just stay home, Mom. And I said, for 6 weeks, are you kidding me? And instead, they ended up giving him an assistant who helped him take all his tests. He stayed on track, and he ended up testing gifted that year. Mm. So again, like from the beginning, so let me be clear as I go into this high school experience. I've always been that mom, but that was when he was a little boy. So here we go. So we were living in Englewood, and he went to Englewood High School for 1 year.
Wow.
And because of the cost of Englewood, the rising cost, it made sense to move. Plus, we were not pleased with the high school. My son was the number one student at Englewood High School, but he had no homework. And I was like, this is ridiculous. And my son was very frustrated. He was like, this school is not, I'm not really working hard. And I was like, you're not. So we transferred him to Uni, which is University High. And University High switched to a charter school in the 2018 school year, 2018-2019. Mm. But we moved in a neighborhood it was, and specifically because we knew that it was, you know, it had a really good education for him. It was between uni or Hamilton, which they call Hammy.
Hammy's
that
a performing
being said,
arts
we start
as well.
The school, oh, cool. Everything is fine. And I knew that he was already being looked at a little differently, I'll be honest, because he came from Inglewood. And they were like, oh, well, he was number one in Inglewood, but surely he won't be, you know, this is a much more competitive school. And I was like, my son can do well at any school. Like, I wasn't really concerned about it. So once he started, he really started doing the work. And he's big on really enjoying his teachers and being a kid who's very active in his education. He's a learner who loves to learn. And then he, and I'll just be honest, he then figures out what does it take to get the A, because he knows, like, we want him to do well. Mm-hmm. And so then he'll get the A, but it's not his priority. His priority is always to learn. So that's important. So in this class, he is taking AP World History, ooh, and he has tons of homework, and he's doing everything, and then the teacher makes an offer of extra credit. She said, oh, if you guys stay after school every Monday for the entire semester, you can get 3 points. And I said to him, well, what are you doing? And he said, oh, it's some kind of a tutoring thing. They brought in students from UCLA, and you basically work with them on any assignments you have. But he said it's a great way to get extra credit. And it was an inconvenience. So let me be very clear. We picked him up every Monday late to stay after school to do this. But he really wanted it. And I was like, is it even worth it? He goes, yeah, Mom, it's 3 points. I might need it at the end. So he does this. So we get to the end of the semester, and we're staying on track with everything. Again, he's taking an AP course, which is much more challenging. He's a sophomore. And he came from school that wasn't as challenging.
Right.
So understand, like, he's taking AP World History as a sophomore. And so he gets his grade near the end, and he has like an 87%. He says, oh, the 3 points are going to give me the A. I'll just make the 90, which is the A. And I, okay, this is good. And I even fussed him a little bit and said, son, you know, and next time maybe you should push it a little bit so that you're not reliant just on the extra credit. He goes, yeah, Mom, whatever. But he's just a really smart kid, and his thing is like, I'm going to get the A. That's all that matters. Okay, so grades come in the, you know, over Christmas break, and he has a B. And we see that his grade is now an 89.7. And I'm saying, wow, that's interesting. Oh, because it was an 87.3. So I say 89.3. I said, son, I thought you were getting 2 points. He said, I was promised 3 points. But so he only had the two. And he said, I was promised 3 points. And I said, are you sure? And he goes, I'm positive. So I said, well, you know what, son? It's clearly a mistake. Why don't you just email your teacher, and then, you know, you can resolve this. And so he sends a really nice email. You know, hey, I saw my grade. Clearly there's been an error. She didn't respond. It was over the holiday. So I said, you know what, son? It's holiday. Let's just wait until school returns, and then, you know, you could just address it. First week of school, I say, okay, son, don't forget to go in and talk to the teacher. He goes, oh, I'm going to talk to her. He comes back home. He looks crushed. I mean, he's like face hanging. I'm like, what's wrong? He goes, oh, I don't want to talk about it. So he didn't want to talk about it for like 2 days. And I'm like, look, kid, you got to tell me what's going on. And he said, the teacher, she just won't listen to me. He said, every time I talk to her, she tells me to be quiet, shut my mouth, stop talking to her. And I'm like, wait, she's saying those exact words. Like, I need to be clear here about, you know, because he's a teenager. Maybe there's some exaggeration. He was like, no. She's like, and don't talk to me again about it. It is what it is. You're only getting the 2 points. And now my pressure is going up. I'm like, okay. So I said, you know what, son? I'm not liking the way this is going, so I'm going to send her an email. So I sent an email, because he even sent me the email he sent her, and it was exactly what he said, but she chose not to respond to it. So I sent an email, and I said, hey, I'm just wanting to follow up. I know my son reached out to you about his grade, and I just wanted to have a conversation. She then says to me, I already talked to him. It is what it is. He's only getting the 2 points. And if you don't like it, you can talk to my supervisor. And I was like, oh, wow. This is like not at all what I expected. So I let her know in a follow-up email. I said, you know what? First of all, I don't appreciate the way you're talking to me. It's very disrespectful, or the way you're, you know, you're writing to me. I can only imagine what my son is experiencing, because he told me that you're being very rude to him in class. And I have a problem. So one, I will be going to your supervisor. And two, I will be following up. And so then she sends this sort of like an apology email, like, oh, okay, I'm a little stressed about the strike. So then I said, okay, they're going on strike.
Right.
And again, I'm trying
to. So this was earlier this spring that the LA school district went on strike.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is right after the break, though, that the strike was going to take place. So mm-hmm. I said, okay, let them deal with the strike. And I was getting a little upset, so I had to calm down myself because I was like, I knew that the end result I wanted was to get the grade changed. I always teach him, focus on the big picture. Mm-hmm. So we ended up, the strike occurred. It lasted, you know, I think it was like 10 days or whatever. And then after that, they went back to school. So I gave it a little bit of time, and I followed up again. And I sent her the email. Oh, and this is very important. The teacher in the second email actually admitted that she did change her mind about the points because she wanted to. That's what, and I said, oh, you put this in writing. That's what did it for me. I was like, she's like, yeah, I did promise him 3 points, and I changed my mind. And I was like, oh, okay. So I sent that email to the principal, and I said, here is the email exchange that I had with this teacher, and I'm very upset by this because my son was promised 3 points. He did the work, and it's not cool. And every time he went to her, she shut him down. And I said, you know, he is the only black male in her class, and I feel that this is just wrong. It's not like she's not very aware of, like, maybe she is aware, but it's not okay because it's really bothering him, and he's very frustrated about it. And then he has to deal with her every day.
Okay, so I have to cut in here for a second, though. She said to you that she changed her mind. Was he the only one in the class who got lower points than she promised? And did she ever tell you why?
He was the only one who actually went to the after-school program. No other kid did it.
Ah, okay.
Right.
Okay.
See, that was another thing that was frustrating. It was like he was the only one. The other kids were like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And he was like, I'll do it. Because in his mind, it was such an easy way to get 3 points,
right, yeah.
3 extra credit, to just go to the tutoring. And here's the thing. He really liked the tutors. They were college students from UCLA. He liked meeting with them every week and engaging and whatever.
Right.
So then I said, well, son, did she ever tell you she was going to give you less points? And he was like, never. He was like, that's the crazy part. He was like, I did it because I was told. And then I said, well, was there anything written? Like, I was just trying to get as much proof or evidence. And that's why when she said it in the email, she's like, no, I did promise him 3 points. And then I changed my mind and I decided to only give him 2. And then I said, well, did you ever inform him that that's what you were going to do at any time through the semester? And she goes, no. And I said, that's the problem I have right there.
Wow.
You made this decision. You changed your mind. He was the only kid going. You knew he was, and you never even had a conversation. So basically, we met with a counselor at the school, the vice principal, the principal. They were explaining the whole process, and they said, you have to sit down with her and him and have, a dialogue. And that's when he got really anxious because he was like, oh, my goodness. But I said, son, I said, I'm teaching you how to stand for yourself, mm-hmm. and you have to do this. I said, we have to follow through. So, yes, we have to sit here and we have to say to her face these things. I said, is there anything you need to tell me? He was like, no, Mom, everything I'm telling you is true. I said, okay. So we go and we meet with her and the principal, and I start off by saying, first of all, let me just say before we even get going, I am upset. And I don't like the way you have engaged with me and my son. That is inappropriate. The dynamics here, they shouldn't be playing out this way. Your teacher, you're his teacher, and the way you're doing things. She said, oh, you know, I apologize for that, and I'm just not a very likable person.
See, now that's amazing
crazy.
To me.
That's crazy.
That she would actually, she's a teacher, and she would actually say, I'm not a very likable. Why is she teaching then?
And that's what I said. I said, well, then perhaps you shouldn't be teaching kids.
Right.
And I'm not saying you have to be, you know, teacher nice, but you do need to listen to your students. And I said, and here's why I have a problem. I said, look at my son. This is a black boy. I mean, I get people like to live in these fantasy worlds where I don't see color in a shop. He's a black boy in the educational system that fails a lot of boys that look like him. I said, and he's the only black boy in your AP history class. I know that for a fact. I said, number 2, he was the only kid that went to the after-school tutoring. I know that for a fact. You also promised 3 points to him that you then took from him without even giving him the dignity of telling him. Do you understand how that made him feel?
Mm-hmm.
And then when he tried to speak to you about it, you told him to get out of your face. That is what I have a problem with as well, because why would you do that to him? Why would you not at least have a conversation or say, hey, I want to talk to you? So then she goes, well, I finally decided that he wasn't doing enough to earn the 3 points. So this was her trying to come in at the end. And so I said, well, could you clarify what that means? He was supposed to attend the after-school program, go to the tutoring every Monday for the semester, which he did. She said, well, sometimes he was just like with the tutors, enjoying this or doing other things. And again, I'm trying to understand. So was he so not supposed to enjoy the experience?
You're right, exactly.
Yeah. My son loved the tutors. So he loved going, and he said they were a lot of fun, and they – here's the crazy part. He didn't really need the tutoring. Understand all of that. Mm-hmm. He just loved the experience of hanging with the college kids who were there. Again, I said to her, if you said something to him about maybe he wasn't performing at the level that you expected, then he could have changed. So did you say anything to him? She was like, no. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. And I said to my son, did she once in the entire semester say, hey, maybe you should be doing X, Y, Z in the tutoring class? And he said, no, she never gave any instruction just to go.
Wow.
Yeah. So basically, she was like, I'm not changing his grade, flat out. And I said, well, I'm going to go to the board because we're going to get his grade changed. Because at the end of the day, he earned an A based on everything that we know to be true, based on the fact that you even told me in an email, which I do have a copy. Mm. I said, so I'm just going to take it all the way. And if I have to take it all the way to the very top, which is the state board or whatever, which mm-hmm. is over LAUSD, I will do that because I want to show my son how we fight for things. And he earned the A. And I wanted to make sure that he got his A. And
right.
I wanted to teach him how to go about handling business such as this, meaning that it was going to take a long time. The principal emphasized, oh, this process could take a year or longer.
Right.
And I said, I have all the time in the world. Mm-hmm. Remember, my son is a sophomore. So my objective was to get the grade changed whenever it would change, before he would leave high school.
Right.
So we started the paperwork. And what's funny about the paperwork, if you're filing in the LAUSD system to change a grade, you can only check certain boxes. Well, it's only, I think it was four options. And the two options that were that made the most sense were fraud,
oh,
and bad faith. And somebody said to me, I remember when I was talking to them, are you sure you want to check fraud?
Yep.
I was like, well, that's the closest I can come. So I researched, and I even gave them in the letter that I sent to the board, I broke down what fraud means, and I broke down bad faith. And I said that based on the definitions of these two words, these are the two closest that we're going to, you know, say mm-hmm. she did. So I also included, again, a formal letter which had all of the emails, all of the dates, all of the times. I showed my son how emails are binding. Mm-hmm. You know, you could even take an email to court. People have gone to prison on emails.
Indeed.
And that emails are important. So we included all the emails, printed those out with the dates and everything. And then I also did research on Black boys in the educational system, because mm-hmm. I was also alleging about her and just the school in general is how Black boys are treated. And so, because this problem to me spoke of something greater than just a point, right? And so I included several articles from different, you know, mm-hmm. Things I had read. And
you put this in your post also. You put this in your social media post.
Yes, I sure did. I put the links in the social media post. And then I just really wrote this very impassioned letter and let them know that at the end I want the grade changed. And I'll go back and say when I was working at Northwestern University for 11 years, I worked in the business school and just learned a lot about like how to really get your point across. And I just always knew from that experience, like when you're writing these letters, you want to really stick to the facts, but also, you know, bring in some personal elements so they really understand like what you're saying here. So it's not just like, oh, change my grade. It's like, oh, I want you to look at this and look at this as on a bigger scale of how our Black boys are treated. Because again, this treatment to me was very troublesome. And it could have crushed him. And if he were any other kid and didn't have the support, one, he would have just been stuck with this B. But also, he wouldn't have known how to speak up for himself. I want to go back and say, but after we had that meeting with her face-to-face and my son had to look her in the eye and challenge her, afterwards, he gave me the biggest hug. He was mm-hmm. so proud. He was like, Mom, you're so great. Like, this was so incredible. And he was like, no matter what happens, I feel really good. And that was so important to me because he was learning how to speak up for himself and to stand up to, you know, people like this. So basically, we submitted it in May, and we just November, I got an email from the principal saying everything has gone through and the decision was made to turn the grade to an A.
Yay!
So,
yay!
Yeah. Yeah. So we were very happy about that. And then they sent the transcripts, which were updated, which was nice because, again, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, he earned it. And my son was just really proud. Mm-hmm. You know, we also talked to him about, you know, next time, don't get 3 points from an A and rely on 3 points.
There's that part, right? Yeah. Make sure you have a 92, you know, like, yes, I get
right.
that. But also, this is a great lesson, even beyond, the, you know, AP World History, by the way, which is the hardest AP class.
Yeah.
It has the reputation of being the hardest. And and he's a sophomore, so I, you know, kudos to him. But beyond AP World History, what he learned was so much more valuable than just, you know, what happened in history. That's a big lesson.
Yeah, we were very pleased with that because I feel like, you know, the ultimate goal is to help. I mean, as a parent, like my job is to help my kids, and this is my second kid. My other kid, she already graduated from Berkeley, and she's a badass, and I'm really proud of her. And I say that because I really work to give them skills that I know that they would need going out into the world. And you know, as a black mother, you know, it's a different role. It's like my non-black friends, oftentimes, like they don't have to have these kinds of experiences because they're not dealing with it. And it is a heavier burden, but I would be failing my children if I didn't prepare them for these types of situations. And also so that they would understand, like, this is a bigger issue.
Right.
It's not just, you know, you're just this one kid. It's like, oh, this is also a bigger issue dealing within the system.
So so that's why we're here.
Yes.
Akiko, you wanted to
so
say
just
something?
Question. Okay. I went to Hollywood, and Hamilton was our rival school because they were both performing arts magnets. I don't know if Hamilton
I love
is still...
the fact that it's called Hammy, and it's a performing arts school. As you're, you're hamming it up.
So I have two best friends who went to Hamilton, and I went to Hollywood, and Hollywood rocks, and we're everything. Anyway, even uni, at one point, was very diverse. As far as...
By diverse, do you mean actually diverse, or...
It was... I mean, there were students from... Because if I remember correctly, is uni still a magnet? Like, they bust students in from...
Uni underwent a big change because they had a lot of, they had a low enrollment because a lot, now, you know, the community is West LA, right?
Yes.
So you do have a lot of white families and you have a lot of Mexican families who still live in the community. And what was happening is a lot of, the white families were leaving the school.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then it became, the enrollment was so low. So in 2018, they became charter. Once it became charter, then they were able to bus in more students and give students an opportunity to come. Because before that, you had to live in the area. So, yeah, I've heard about uni being more diverse years ago, and then the numbers fell off. So now they're definitely picking back up.
So... And as far as the teachers, what does the demographic look like? Is it mostly all white teachers? Like, what does that demographic look like? And what was your son's experience with other teachers? And did he ever feel like he had been discriminated against or treated differently in other classes?
For the most part, I will say that his experiences have been pretty pleasant. Even at uni, for example, his honors English teacher, he loves her, right?
Mm-hmm.
She pushes him really hard, and he got a B in her class, but he earned it, and he loves her. So again, it's like for him, I think it's the total experience. She also really encouraged his writing. But let me just be clear. This particular teacher is a white teacher who also, their first book they read was Maya Angelou, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, which is very important.
Yes.
So even though she's this white teacher, she's making sure that they're reading literature from black authors and from others. Like that's a sign of a teacher that's very aware of her class and her students and giving them books that of authors that look like them, and also giving the other students the opportunity to see these other writers as well. Like, it's not just for, you know, a black student to read Maya Angelou.
Everyone should
read Maya Angelou.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about her. And so, yeah, overall, the experience has been fairly positive. So I think that's why this one was really hard for him. because he was just really surprised at the constant barking, the constant disrespect. I feel like a lot of teachers need to do a little bit more, like, training, you know,
yes.
And
so,
knowing how to.
So Akiko and I talk about this a lot because there are teachers who live and teach in Clark County in Las Vegas who post on social media some of the most racist things, and
oh,
then you
gosh.
Call them out yep. for it, and they're like, that wasn't racist.
What are you talking
what
about?
Are you, what,
like, no way.
Like, oh, my God. But so, and, which it comes to something I wanted to ask you about. The teacher said she didn't think he was doing enough work, and then you also embellished that with, you know, saying that she said that he was enjoying himself too much. I see that as, like, you know, would she have said the same thing about a white kid?
Right.
Which, you know, a white kid enjoying learning, would that have triggered her?
I was going to say that reminds me of the hashtag Black Boy Joy.
Right,
and
right.
When she said that, I immediately thought of that. I'm like, wait a minute. So my kid, who is staying after school already to do some tutoring he really doesn't need because he wants to get these points, and then you're actually saying that he's, like, enjoying himself too much?
Right.
What is he supposed to do, be miserable? Like, is this whole process supposed to be unhappy for him? And let me just say this. My son is the sweetest kid, and I've dealt with this his entire, you know, educational career with protecting him because it's this belief that because he's a black male, he's supposed to be what, like, unhappy? He's supposed to not enjoy learning? He's supposed to have all these things? And that, to me, is just not okay. I'm like, no, my son has the right to be exactly who he is. Like, even when he was at Inglewood, again, it's predominantly black Latino school, and they just had a lot of their educational, oof, it was a mess. He was like, Mom, he's like, now that I'm at uni, he was like, you know, despite some of the challenges, he said it's a far superior education, and it's not fair to my friends back in Inglewood that they're not getting. He said some of those kids are really smart. He said, but they're not being challenged enough. And he was like, and yeah, they'll go to college, but they're not going to be prepared. And that really bothers him, like, to the point, like, where he's like, maybe I'm going to go in the educational field and try to fix that.
Almost as if they're not expected to go further
definitely.
Than, and I think Inglewood is Inglewood Unified School District, if I'm not correct. Isn't
exactly.
Inglewood
yep.
High? It's, I grew up in Inglewood too. So I know that area as well. And it's almost as if they're not expected to do more graduate, if at all.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
and yeah, it was crazy. They had honor roll assembly. I swear, more than half the school was there. And I said to my son, I said, how are all these kids on the honor roll? And he was like, I don't know, Mom. He was like, because I don't hardly have any work myself. He's like, and I'm the number one student. And they do get them into college. It's just unfortunate because I teach college. So sometimes I'll get a kid from Inglewood, and I can tell they're just not prepared, and they're so far behind. And so that, to me, is what's frustrating. And I think the thing that's also frustrating is that then you have these, you know, kids in the system, and then I have to deal with, you know, teachers that are racist who will say they're not. That's the thing. They'll be like, well, I'm not.
And who honestly, who honestly think they aren't.
They think they
it's
are
not,
not
that they're lying. It's that they don't really understand what racism is.
I actually had a teacher.
I was about to say, don't understand what racism is.
Right. I had a teacher on my page last night, and I banned her. She said, why do you guys get to have a BSU? Isn't that racist? Why do you get to have an African-American summit? Isn't that racist? I said, well, the entire U.S. of A. is all white.
Right.
Right.
So.
Right. White people have summits all the time.
All the time.
We just call them meetings.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I said, so. And she said, well, doing that is you're segregating yourself and it's racist. I said, empowering us is racist? No, you just don't get it, and you never will.
Yeah. No. And you know what I always tell people when they say that? I say, first of all, define racism, and then we'll start from there.
Right.
Because, see, if you're just assuming racism is you calling me the N-word, then we're not on the same page.
We're not on, right.
I'm like, it's not you calling me the word, it's you treating me like the word and preventing me from living my best life. If I can't even get a home in a decent neighborhood because the realtors won't even show me the home.
Yes.
Or they're told, don't let black people move there, or Latino, or, you know, Hispanic, Asian, whomever. It's like, that's the thing that people have to understand. So in the educational system, like you said, it's not always blatant. It's not some, like, the teacher's in your kid's face, but it's things like, this kid is not doing enough work, and I'm not even going to bother to tell him that. I'm just going to take the points away because I think I can. You know, my whole point to her was, you wouldn't do that to a white child.
Right.
And I just, see, I say it. I just say it. Mm-hmm. And then they usually get shocked. Mm-hmm. But I don't really care because I'm just going to say the thing that we're all thinking. Like, let's just say it.
Yeah. And there's that expectation, I think. We were talking about this before we got in touch with you, a black parent actually isn't going to fight.
Yeah, they like, assume that we're not going to fight. We don't have the time. We don't have the resources. We're not educated enough. They assume that. And then here you and I come.
Yeah.
Saying, I wish you would.
Yeah.
And then they're shocked as if.
Yeah.
I shared a story where, again, I went to LAUSD. I went all education through LAUSD, and the teacher did not allow me to use the bathroom. I had to use the bathroom, and the teacher did not allow me to use the bathroom. And by the time my father was done, she was out of the district.
Ooh,
she could no longer teach in LAUSD because he said, you made my daughter hold her urinate. Like, you made her hold that. No. That's kind of like abusive. So
it is.
We fight. We do fight. Mm. And that's one of my things is empowering parents who feel like if they fight, nothing will be done. No, it will be done. And it does take time.
Yep.
So you telling your son, it's going to take some time. Be patient, but just hold strong. Hold your ground. Stand your ground on it.
Yep.
And I'm so happy for him. Like I could feel the energy from you when he was like, yes, Mom, we did it.
There's a couple things I want to throw in here as we're winding this up. One is this concept that you brought up earlier about we don't see color. I want both of you to talk about what this concept means to you.
So for me, mm-hmm. I let it be. I'm always saying, no, I need you to see my color because this is who I am. I'm offended when people say I don't see color.
Yep.
You better. Are you colorblind?
Right.
It's not offensive to me for you to recognize me as a black woman. I'm not offended by that
at all.
So
also when people say that, it means they don't see you.
Right.
Right.
And it's like, here's the thing. I went to a very, very multicultural grammar school and then ultimately Whitney Young, and my friends were all different races. Right. I remember one of my good friends was Asian, or Chinese specifically. And I would go to her parents' home and, eat food when I was there, and I would eat whatever they cooked because, we were kids, and I learned differences. And it's pretty dope, And so, that's what's really great. It's this idea of, we are different, and that's beautiful. Like, I love some dim sum. I love, learning about a whole different group of people. So when I would actually go back home to my community and my friends would say things that were, disparaging against, Asian individuals or people, I would just say, that's not true. My friend is Chinese, and that's not true, mm-hmm. And that's what I learned to do at a very young age was to speak up, not just for myself, but for others. And I still do that. I do it in my role. I'm the co-chair for the Committee of Black Writers at the Writers Guild of America West. I speak up not only for black writers in Hollywood, but also for all the other, we call them equity and inclusion committees.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, I just feel like we have to own what makes us unique. It's like, and a big part of that is also in the Hollywood, in movies and television, sometimes you'll have a character of color, but they don't feel real.
Right.
You're like, that doesn't feel real.
Mm-hmm.
What? Because they didn't even try. It's like, or they didn't hire someone to create that character. That's a I don't see color person, right? It's like, oh, I don't see color, but then they'll stick an actor of color in, but there's nothing unique about them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that do make us unique and very different and special. And I agree with you. I believe it's an honor and a gift to be who I am.
Yes.
So no, don't tell me you don't see me. That means you also don't see my history. You don't see my truth. I let people know, my family is from the South. We were part of the Great Migration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's beautiful to me that my grandfather was a sharecropper who moved to get a better life for our family. And when I graduated from college, I was the first to graduate from college in my family. And then my daughter became the second.
Okay, so what I want to know here is, did your son take the AP test and did he pass?
Oh, yes. He took the AP exam and he did pass.
Yay. So as a sophomore, he's got an AP credit. That's pretty amazing.
That is pretty amazing.
We have been talking to Michelle Amore-Gilley. She is a screenwriter and professor at Loyola Marymount in Los Angeles. She also sold a show to CBS, The Honorable. It is about a fictional black female mayor of Chicago. I think you had to change some of the dialogue because that became not fictional, as now Chicago has a black mayor, Lori Lightfoot. I'm sitting here with Akiko Cooks. Thank you for doing this with me, Akiko.
Yes, absolutely.
As always.
As always.
Michelle, thank you for arranging this. We know that you're in Europe and it's pretty late there. So thanks for talking with us. Your story is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Nevada Voice podcast. We will have more conversations on this kind of thing, on bias in schools, because it is an ongoing problem.
It's alive and well. It has a heartbeat, a strong heartbeat, and it's a problem.
Yes.
And we are here to fix that problem.
We're here to fix that, or at least shine a light on it.
Shine a light on it, yeah.
This is the Nevada Voice podcast.
All right.